The Behind the Bets podcast with Doug Kazarian is presented by DraftKings. Download the app for free today.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in. It is another Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. We are taping this, Thursday, June 11th. Christina, it's already mid-June. Kind of flew by, hasn't it?
I can't believe it. I looked at the calendar and thought to myself, how is it June already?
And we've had just one significant story after another in the news world. I mean, there's a million memes out there, but one of them was like, someone needs to tell, you know, the 2020 every month doesn't have to be a season finale. Like, right? Like, it's always like the big episode, the culmination, and it's just been one thing after another. But sports is returning. I was thinking about doing some golf podcasts, so golf and UFC just didn't materialize. So we're going to do UFC coming up with, guess who? Matt Holt has done a wonderful job. A little bit of a, we're staggering the fight, so we're going to talk about the kind of higher profile fights, but Matt's best picks are after that. So you'll get analysis from both of us on the first part of segment. And then his best bets are actually on the undercard. So we'll get to that. So it's a good listen coming up. A lot of action with the UFC. Christina, they kind of owned the spotlight, and Major League Baseball has a chance to do that. They're not seizing the opportunity, but the UFC certainly has.
Yeah, I think it's pretty crazy. You know, with everything that's going on, it's great to have sports back. And now it seems like there are sports competing for the spotlight since everybody wants to get back and everybody has the opportunity to, it seems like.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to see how these leagues are playing out. Obviously, the NBA has returned. We are targeting July 31st, 8 regular season games, then the playoffs. Go check out my Twitter feed where we've taped Eastern Conference and Western Conference previews. We'll get those on here as well. We're going to break down that stuff. A lot of interesting sort of analysis. It's going to be a wild ride in Orlando and a lot of contingencies. Like, we don't know how it's all going to play out. What happens if a player tests positive? What happens if a coach tests positive? So a lot to be sorted out, but the NBA is proceeding. We'll look at the NHL as well, and we're still waiting word on Major League Baseball. But until then, we do have golf going on right now. We do have soccer as well. We have UFC, another card this weekend. Let's get to it with Matthew Holt. But first, I want to remind everyone that my ESPN colleague, Scott Van Pelt, also has a podcast called SV Pod. Make sure you download and subscribe to Behind the Bets and SV Pod on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Also, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at over $100,000. Download the DraftKings app and enter code Doug, that's D-O-U-G, at sign up. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Stop. Hammer time.
And now a guy who we really need to change his name to, back by popular demand, because I said it last week on the pod. A lot of you out there in the Twitter sphere want his analysis. Matthew Holt back with us to break down another UFC card. You have to start charging rent here. I'm invading your space.
It's a pleasure to be on, and it's so exciting that in a time where we're all so hungry for live sports, that the UFC has really stepped forward and continues to put on cards week after week. And the great thing about UFC cards compared to boxing is, I know there's always that great debate, boxing or MMA, is every single fight in an MMA card has betting on it and is televised. Thus, it provides so many betting opportunities per card. It really is exciting and fun.
Yeah, you know, it's unfair that boxing gets kind of overshadowed. I mean, obviously there's overlap in the sport, but we can just kind of treat it like two different things. With boxing, it's a spectacle. It's one big main event. Sure, there's undercards. Sure, there's other fights, but they just don't have like it doesn't resonate like the UFC does, obviously, given the league component, and we know the guys and they fight. It's just more of an exciting watch. I'm right there with you, but fight night in Vegas, fight night anywhere with a big boxing match, it's still the sweet sign. So I'm with you. The UFC has definitely like cornered the market, but for someone like myself, there's room for both. And, to your point though, UFC has done a wonderful job. How about Fight Island, right? Like Fight Island, pretty big announcement this week as well.
Yeah, I mean, originally after, you know, Dana struggled to get some fights going in California and all with all the resistance he met during COVID, this Fight Island idea was born, and they didn't know if they'd be able to host fights in Florida and Las Vegas at that time. And really, you know, they thought the first fight they might be able to hold, we're going to be on this island and in UAE. And but now it's real. There's a lot of excitement around the fights in Abu Dhabi, and what an opening card they put together with three title fights, a lot of big names, you know, featherweight rematch between Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway, Gilbert Burns, who just came off the performance of his life, finally getting a title shot against Kamaru Usman, and Peter Yan against former featherweight champion Jose Aldo. And I'll say this, for those of you who may not be familiar with Peter Yan yet, he is a future superstar. I mean, he is absolutely unbelievable at his striking game. A lot of people don't know him because he's from the Ukraine.
You know, I wonder what's going to happen with Fight Island. Kind of like the Masters, where, like, bigwigs can play on Monday after Masters weekend. I wonder if, like, the suits can, like, just stay on the island after, like, you know, the grass is cut perfectly, much like Augusta, and you can sort of just get some bang for your buck after the big event. Maybe that's something that they should think about. Who knows?
Yeah, I know the media that follows and covers it is really excited to, you know, get out there on this island and be a part of the whole experience. And to the UFC's credit, they put together, I think, as stacked a card as they could for the first fight on Fight Island, especially for a no-fans card.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's get into this weekend's card. Obviously not the same caliber of fighters, but all tickets cash the same, like we enjoy saying here in the betting space. The main event, women's flyweight, Jessica Ai against Cynthia Calvillo. It's five rounds, and it's expected to be, I'm gonna ask you. The critics have said it's gonna be a snooze fest because there's not enormous punching power. Total of 4.5. What are you expecting this weekend?
Well, it's hard. I don't know that it's gonna be a snooze fest because both of these women really do get after it. Especially Jessica Ai, who sort of has a brawling style, but despite the fact that she has a brawling style, she gets very few finishes. In fact, Jessica Ai hasn't had a win by finish since 2014. So that's 6 years since she's finished an opponent in the octagon. That really bodes well, I think, for this one going the distance, especially when you consider the fact that Jessica Ai is going to be the significantly bigger fighter as a woman who used to fight at 135 pounds. For the majority of her career until recently, dropped down to 125 pounds and challenged unsuccessfully for the title against the woman who fought at 115 pounds for the majority of her career, Cynthia Calvillo, who's now going to be moving up to 125 pounds. So even though Calvillo, has every chance of winning this fight, I don't think we're in for a finish. And thus, if you're looking for a total play on this fight, even though you have to lay the juice, you probably have to lean over. And I think thus, whichever fighter you like, you could probably parlay it to that fighter and the over.
Or just by decision or something like that, because the over is minus $1.90-ish, $1.95, sometimes $2, but it's a straight pick 'em. So if you want to get a little plus money, you can pick the fighter by decision or something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, next fight on the card, Carl Robertson and Marvin Vettori. 220 favorite Vettori. Here, the over 2.5 is favored at a similar juice, $1.95 range. You know, these things are, the juice is there for a reason. We've talked about Shevchenko and other stuff, certain scenarios where the wrong team is favored. I just don't know if I want to grab a piece of the underdog here because of the major health concerns and with the weight cut for the first fight here.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. And that's why I think there might be some value in the under here. When we start looking at this fight, 2.5 over minus 190, essentially, it's a 2-to-1 favorite to basically go the distance. But when we look at Carl Roberson, both his losses are by submission. This is a guy who's had a little trouble with elite grapplers, and he's going to be facing one here. Is 8 of the 14 victories for Marvin Vettori are by submission. And he is really good on the ground. Gave current middleweight champion Israel Adesanya all he could handle in a split decision loss there. He has won his last two fights by decision. So his last three wins actually all come by decision. So lately he's been more of a decision fighter. But upon his initial entry into the UFC, I think he had a run of 4 or 5 fights in a row with finishes. And when you consider, you know, hey, there could be a bad weight cut, there could be some fatigue issues for Roberson. He's been susceptible to submissions in the past. They're going to be fighting in the smaller octagon again. So for an elite grappler, there's probably going to be more grappling and submission opportunities in this fight. And because of that, I do think that there's an opportunity potentially maybe to play the under here if I was going to play it at all.
Yeah, so the comeback on the under is plus 175 neighborhood. I can get behind that, or maybe even, you know, just take Vittori inside the distance, right? Like Vittori to win without a decision. And, so, you know, I asked you this, especially in a 3-round fight versus a 5-round, how much concern is there versus inside the distance versus like an under 2.5, that extra half there?
It's not a big differential for me. I would rather, if I can get better odds, take inside, you know, take the under 2.5 a lot of times, because sometimes what happens in a fight is you get a guy up, you know, up 2 rounds, feel like he's going to win the decision. And a lot of times in that 3rd round, you may have one fighter not necessarily looking to get a finish. And thus, you know, they're less risk adverse in the 3rd round. And a lot of times those last 2 minutes, we see people just making sure they don't get knocked out or do something crazy or take extra chances.
So that was my next question, is I tweeted about it. And obviously, look, it's easy to sit on my couch and criticize. But, you know, in sports, we see so much clock management, right? In football, you're up 10 points. You run the ball, you play clock, things like that. In basketball as well. Why do we not see that if a guy has lost the first 2 rounds, clearly, because we've talked about the judges being very confused, if you will, in the past. But if you've clearly lost the first 2 rounds, like, why don't we see fighters change that game plan for that 3rd round and go more on the offensive?
I think that historically we have. I think what's happened here is the last couple of cards in this smaller octagon, potentially, I think the smaller octagon's having an effect there, where the guys that may be looking to cruise in the 3rd round, it's a little bit harder to hide in that 25-foot octagon in comparison to the 30-foot octagon.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. I would just think, like, at some point, like, you, because especially with the UFC, you can just get caught with one punch, and we've seen some dramatic comebacks over the years, but we, you know, that's few and far between, so I just feel like there's a smart way to go about it, but who am I to, you know, tell others how to fight the good fight, if you will. So we're kind of on the same page there. I'm just going down a list of one of these, sports books. So Mark De La Rosa against Jordan Espinoza. Espinoza is about $1.60. The over here, 2.5, -220. So above, -$2.
Yeah, this is a tough fight. I mean, both of these guys have struggled in the UFC, and this is kind of something that we're seeing throughout this card, is guys that have either never made their UFC debut or have struggled in the UFC, and they're matching guys up who are both fairly young. You know, it's hard not to like Espinoza a little bit on paper here, but but at the end of the day, De La Rosa is only 25 years old. Fights at a pretty good gym in Fort Worth, Texas, the Factory X. He is on a 3-fight losing streak, which is pretty rare in the UFC that you continue to get fights after that. But some of those losses are to Alex Perez, who's a top 10 guy who we just saw beat Jussie Formiga, Kai Kara France, who's a rising star in that division as well. He lost to Tim Elliott, who's a pretty legit guy, another ranked guy. So to De La Rosa's credit, he's lost when he steps up in class, but when he drops down in class, he beat Joby Sanchez, he beat Elias Garcia. You know, this is a spot where 25 years old, potentially De La Rosa could have gotten better training at a good gym. And thus, if I was going to play this fight, which I didn't, I would probably only take the underdog.
Okay. In terms of favorite money, -$4 is about as high as I like to go. And that's what we're seeing with Merab Dvalishiv. I always butcher this. Dvalishivli. At least feel it. Help me out there, Matt.
I think it's
Dvalishvili.
Dvalishvili, okay. Yeah.
All right. I butcher that all the time. But he's a guy I always look to bet on. Ray Borg is his opponent. But you're looking at -$4 here. Any value on the dog? Or would you even get involved with the favorite here?
So this is an interesting fight as well. So Ray Borg, I always thought, was an underappreciated guy. Historically, though, I don't like betting on fighters making a turnaround in a month or less. But we're seeing that so much more frequently because COVID has forced kind of the UFC to re-tap into that talent pool so much because they've been unable to bring in international fighters due to travel restrictions thus far. And it's kind of becoming a trend that we're seeing with these guys making the really quick turnarounds. And we saw it last week with Brian Kelleher. Stamen was a guy that I thought, you know, we talked about it on this show, that I thought was really going to be in a blowout situation if not for the fact that he had to deal with those issues with the passing of his brother unexpectedly. But what's interesting last week is Ray Borg fought a tougher opponent less than a month ago in Ricky Simon. And despite the fact that Borg pretty much obviously dropped rounds one and two, he was the fighter rallying in round three, and he really looked sharp in round three. And round two was pretty close, and that fight ends up being a split decision against Ricky Simon. Ray Borg making the quick turnaround here. I'm not sure. I don't know that I want to get behind Ray Borg, but I certainly don't want to lay $3.50 here with Volashevi in a fight where, I mean, look at the guys he's beaten. Tarion Ware, Brad Katona, Casey Kenny's an okay win. But, I mean, decision wins over Brad Katona and Tarion Ware don't do anything for me. And he also fought Ricky Simon, so they have an opponent in common. Ricky Simon dominated him and ended up choking him out, whereas we saw Ray Borg give a heck of a fight to Ricky Simon. And if there would have been another round, Ray Borg probably beats Ricky Simon. So I think Borg is a little bit underappreciated here on the odds board, and I may end up with a very small play on Ray Borg, but I certainly wouldn't want to lay $4 here in this spot.
Okay, so maybe some steam on fight night, and you can maybe get some serious plus money, more than the plus 310 right now at Caesars that Ray Borg is offered. I'm looking at the total of this next fight, and that's where am I on my list? And that's with Charles Jourdain and Andre Fili. So Jourdain, as all 10 of his wins are by stoppage, okay? So, and then Feely's, you know, he's a bad dude. So definitely the more experienced fighter. So I'm looking at the under here in this one with Feely at plus 150 under 2.5. Feely's also minus 2.25. How do you see this one playing out?
I also like the under in this fight. And you were talking about Jourdain and all 10 of his wins by stoppage, but Andre Touchy Feely, one of the better nicknames in all of MMA. He also has 9 knockouts to his credit, 12 finishes and 20 wins. So this is a guy who tends to get finishes as well. And they weren't all finishes early in his career. In fact, his last win over Shaman Moraes last July was by knockout. So these are a couple of guys that really get after it. Andre Feely, though, has toned down his style a little bit. I mean, he used to literally be all offense, no defense early in his career. Since he started training with Uriah Faber and the guys up at Team Alpha Male, he has reined in some of the aggression a little bit, and that's why we've seen so many more decisions lately. But I do agree, all the value here is on the under. And again, we're talking about an Andre Feely who's a $2 favorite here against an opponent who's probably going to have to score a knockout to win in the smaller cage with a couple of guys that can really bang. I'm with you. I think the value, especially at that plus 155 range, is squarely on the under.
Yeah, no, that's you said it. You know, that's the thing. You get all that plus money, and it's the side I'd pick anyway. So I saved your, like, favorite plays, if you will, and I don't want to put words completely in your mouth, but I know you and I communicated before the taping of the podcast, because I wanted to touch on those fights because I knew you had opinions and analysis, and I wanted to weigh in as well. But let's talk about the ones you kind of have firmer opinions. You have Charles Rosa against Kevin Aguilar. Aguilar is about a minus -180, the over 2.5, minus $2, and you're on Rosa here.
Yeah, this was the underdog that I really landed on, looking at all these underdogs in that plus 150 to plus 170 range. And at the end of the day, it started with kind of that, you know, don't always base your opinion on what you saw last. So the last thing we saw a month ago is Charles Rosa completely get out grappled by Bryce Mitchell. But Bryce Mitchell may be the best grappler in the featherweight division, period. And when you look at who the guys Rosa's fought, Yair Rodriguez, a top 5 guy, Dennis Seaver, who was a perennial top 10 guy until he retired, Shane Burgos, another ranked guy, a Kyle Bochniak. I mean, Rosa's fought some of the toughest guys at 145 pounds. And what I thought was interesting is the guy had a 2.5, almost 3-year layoff, came back, scored an upset win in his first fight back with an armbar submission over Manny Bermudez. Then he fell in love with his jiu-jitsu a little too much against the best grappler in the division and got out grappled by Bryce Mitchell, although he did make it the distance, fending off all those submissions. And now he comes back in here and steps back down in class with his third fight, quick turnaround. So he's back in the whole groove of training against a guy in Kevin Aguiar who, you know, hasn't fought the best guys in the UFC. And when he has stepped up in class, he lost. So, you know, he had a big 9-fight win streak coming into 2019, which earned him a fight with fellow rising star Dan Ige, who we just saw beat Edson Barbosa. And Ige dominated him. He turned around and got knocked out in his next fight by Turk Hugoff. And so and this is, you know, coming off two straight losses, including a knockout in this first round of his last fight. I wonder where the mindset of Aguiar is. Is he going to continue to be as aggressive as he has been on the feet, considering it got him knocked out in his last fight? Ige was able to counterpunch him all night long. And so if he comes out a little less aggressive, I think Rosa might be able to hang on the feet. And again, in the smaller cage, we talked about two things, power punching and elite grapplers being able to get fights to the ground because it's harder to avoid takedowns in the smaller cage. I do think there's a chance that Rosa can get a takedown here. And if this goes to the ground, I think Rosa is going to have some advantages on the ground, especially in the submission game. So Rosa, to me, has more ways to win. I actually think if Aguiar is a little tentative, Rosa could stand and strike with him, potentially win a decision. I think Rosa could submit him. At the end of the day, Rosa has more ways to win, in my opinion, and thus +155 seemed like a little bit of value.
Yeah, you've talked about in the past on podcasts here just about the paths to win. Yeah, I read a preview, and Aguiar's kind of, they labeled him a one-trick pony, and that's a little extreme, but I get the thought process there, so I'm there with you on the dog. You mentioned a lot of Americans on the card. We've got a featherweight battle here, Jordan Griffin and Derek Minner. So definitely a reach advantage with Griffin. And given the MMA style versus like boxing, how much value do you put in that, like a 4-inch reach advantage here, like Griffin against Minner?
I think reach advantage is really important in MMA. It means a lot on the ground game. It means a lot in terms of being able to lock in submissions. Guys with really short arms have trouble actually executing some submissions. So I think it does mean a lot. And look, this isn't boxing. Again, you know, with these tiny 4-ounce gloves these guys use, which are more meant to protect their own hands rather than the opponent's face, you know, we've seen it in MMA so many times. It doesn't take a lot of shots. And thus, just being able to touch your opponent sometimes with these 4-ounce gloves means a lot. I think this, I don't think this fight is even close here. I thought this fight could have easily been a -300. Jordan Griffin is a guy. First of all, these two fought in 2018. This is a rematch. And Jordan Griffin submitted Derek Minor then. And what's interesting about Minor to me is all his wins basically come by submission. 21 of his 24 wins historically come by submission. He has one knockout in his entire career. It really looks uncomfortable on the feet. Not only is he not a good striker on the feet, he looks uncomfortable standing on the feet. And this is a guy with 11 losses. 8 of those are by submission himself. So while his submission game is good, he tends to also get submitted quite a bit, including the first time these two fought each other. And this isn't the first time he's got a shot in the UFC. He got a shot on Dana White Contender Series against Herbert Burns, got submitted 2.5 minutes into the first round, got a shot on a late notice to come up and fight Grant Dawson on a card in February, got submitted early in the second round. You know, Minor tends to fade. He's really dangerous with his submission with his submissions early, but if he doesn't get one early, then he tends to get finished himself. He's been finished 10 times. Jordan Griffin already finished him. And on the other side, when you look at Jordan Griffin, this is a guy who is actually very competitive, who really could be an interesting prospect at 145 pounds. He won 9 out of 10 fights to get a shot on the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. won by submission on that, and they threw him right into the fire. His first fight, technically, in the UFC was against Dan Ige, who, you know, we saw how good he was against Edson Barbosa. So he lost a decision to Ige that was actually pretty competitive. And then he turned around and lost to another ranked guy in Chaz Skelly. But when he stepped back down a little bit in class in February against TJ Brown, he absolutely destroyed TJ Brown, ended up choking him out in the second round. I think Jordan Griffin's going to have a huge advantage on the feet. He trains at a great gym at Rufus Sport up there in Milwaukee with Anthony and Sergio Pettis. You know, that's a big-time gym up there with Duke Rufus. This is a real fighter in Jordan Griffin. And going against a guy here who's really a regional fighter at best, who is not ever going to be able to compete with guys in the UFC, I think Jordan Griffin blows him away. I hate to lay minus 175, but I think it should probably be closer to minus 300. And just like the first time these two fought, I don't think it goes very long. And I think you can actually parlay Griffin with the under in this fight.
Okay, so if you're allowed those correlated parlays. And just for those kind of unfamiliar with all that, so 175 it translates to 64%. So you think, and then minus 300 is 75%. So you're thinking it's more of a 75% likelihood he wins, and you're getting at 64%. That's when you hear some of the math modelers talk about edges, that's sort of where they talk about is converting the two. Another play for you is Anthony Ivey over Christian Aguilera. You like Ivey here because you like the wrestling component.
Yeah, one of the hardest things to do when you're looking at two guys making their UFC debut is to break down what their accomplishments on the regional scene actually mean, because the regional organizations can be very, very different. Anthony Ivey doesn't have very many fights as a professional, just 10 fights. But half of those have been title fights. He was the former Fury FC champion, where he defended the belt twice. Then he moved on to WXC, where he won the title over there in his first fight. So the fact that half of his fights were title fights in regional organizations against semi-recognizable names means at least in his 10 fights, despite the fact that they haven't been in the UFC, they've been against some better talent. You know, when you look at some of the names on Aguilera's list of opponents, it's really weak. We're talking about some really soft regional competition. He did fight his last five fights in the LFA, which is a little bit better than most of the fights he had in his career, but he only went 2-2 in LFA. And the big difference here, and if you watch the weigh-ins of the press conference, you're going to notice it right away, is that these two guys aren't going to look like they're in the same weight class. Ivey is 6'2". He's huge for 170 pounds. He's one of those guys that has to work with a gym and a dietitian. He cuts a lot of weight. He's massive. He has a really good wrestling, big-time power in both hands, big-time chain wrestling, whereas Aguilera is 5'9", a full 3 inches, 5 inches shorter. He's going to look like he is at least a weight class below Ivey. And while Aguilera has shown some power on the regional scene, it's mostly against softer competition again. And I don't think that power is going to translate. And I not only do I think Anthony Ivey is going to get the win here, he could simply continue to get takedowns and ride out position, I think, and go to a decision here. But I actually think he's going to be aggressive in his UFC debut, trying to make a big statement against a guy who he should be able to make a big statement against. And oh, by the way, Aguilera has had really poor takedown defense against much lesser competition on the regional scene. Now taking on a guy who is significantly larger, significantly more athletic than him, if he couldn't stop takedowns against lesser competition, I don't think he's going to be able to stop takedowns at all in the smaller 25-foot octagon against a much larger superior athlete than Anthony Ivey. I think if Ivey wants to, he gets the finish here. But this one, again, should be a blowout mismatch.
You're all about the undercard, if you will.
Yeah.
That's where you're actually. Hey, look, we said at the beginning of the podcast, all tickets cash the same. So I like it. So we got a breakdown of the main or higher profile matchups, I should say, and then even the undercards as well. Anything else stand out to you before we let you go?
So I did make a really small. I would say this. So we have. I know we had four fights canceled, which has really done a lot to kind of the odds of some of these fights. But we have one, two, three. four fights of minus 200 or greater favorites in Vettori, I guess five, Feely, Valashvili, however you say his name, Avia, and Agapova. And for those people, and I know there's a lot of them out there who like to parlay some of these big favorites, I would warn that I don't feel comfortable with any of these big favorites. Avia is really raw, and while she's super aggressive, she's really raw. There's a potential for her to get out-wrestled there. We talked about Ray Borg. I actually took a very small one-third unit, small flyer on Hannah Cyphers, despite the fact that she's also on a 30-day turnaround and is fighting a fighter who's a full weight class heavier than her, so she's going to have massive size disadvantages. Agapova in that fight, who's minus 250, is a really wild, raw 23-year-old striker who I really don't think has fully matured into her entire MMA game. And I wouldn't be surprised if the technical striking of Hannah Cyphers shown through here, and even though she's much smaller and that probably negates her opportunity to get a knockout, I think she has a chance to maybe sneak out a decision here. But I would just warn against the guys who like to parlay those big favorites. I'm not sure I feel comfortable with any of the $2 or heavier favorites on this card.
Good PSA there by you, Matt. A little public service announcement. Caution. Proceed with caution on that front. All right, dude. Good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. Thorough analysis. And if nothing else, we are much more informed viewers this Saturday night.
There we go. Thanks, Doug. Best of luck Saturday. Take care,
Thank you, my friend.
You
too.
Kicking is for losers.
All right. Thanks to Matthew Holt. Always does a wonderful job breaking down the UFC cards. I just want to reiterate the PGA Tour is back. That's right. We have a full weekend of golf ahead of us and subsequent weekends. Even though the trophy is reserved for the winner, the big cash prizes don't have to be. To add to the excitement, DraftKings, the official daily fantasy game of the PGA Tour, is putting you in the center of the action with a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit. It's easy to play. Just pick six golfers, stay under the salary cap, and submit your lineup before the tournament tees off on Thursday. Then sit back and follow the action. The more red numbers they have on the leaderboard, the closer you'll be to winning some green. Rack up points for pars, birdies, finishing position, and more. It doesn't get any closer to a major than this with all the heavy hitters taking the course and $1 million up for grabs at DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code Doug to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's promo code Doug, D-O-U-G, to get a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings, minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We can all use $1 million anytime, right? All right, Christina, thanks so much. Are you gonna fire on these fights this weekend?
I'm definitely going to be watching. I don't know if I'll be betting anything.
Okay.
I definitely think that this is now new territory. I've transitioned out of football, and we had a break with sports not really being a thing. Now that it's coming back, I need to refresh myself again.
Good. Well, not a ton of action out there, so you should definitely immerse yourself in UFC if you are a sports nut listening at home. They do a great job, and I think we've done a nice job here with the picks as well. So hopefully we can hand out more winners moving forward, and that's about it. So thanks to everyone for downloading. We'll catch you back here next week.